Welcome back.
Recording in progress.
Ms. Baloyi, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you. Welcome back. We proceed. I recognize Advocate Mayosi.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ms. Baloyi. Let's continue with your founding affidavit in the High Court matter, where you identified what you said was unconstitutional behavior on the part of the PP and the CEO from paragraphs 39, 40 and onwards. And you specifically picked out certain investigations as an illustration of this conduct. Do you see that?
Yes.
And you said that in relation to those investigations, by way of illustration, their behavior, both in relation to the reports and the timing of the release of those reports, was what you found that behavior conduct problematic. Starting with the Ngwindi investigation, can you just elaborate for the committee why it is that you found the behavior of the CEO or PP problematic in the conduct of that investigation?
Chair, as I indicated earlier, is Mr. Mahlangu was interested in what needs to go into that report and what doesn't need to go into that report. And the other discomforting matter for me was, you know, he was discussing, you know, pertinent issues with a senior investigator about what needs to be excluded from the report, in the fact that, you know, we will meet, the four of us, myself, the executive manager, chief investigator, and the senior investigator, looked at this case and agree on what needs to go into that report. And then later on, we will realize that, you know, the senior investigator, Mr. Gok, you know, changed that particular report. And then when you ask him questions, you could not even find an answer. And what disturbed me the most was the fact that, you know, Mr. Mahlangu said to me when I reprimanded verbally Mr. Gok that, you know, we can't spend hours on a report. And then he goes back and change what we have agreed upon. And interestingly, Mr. Mahlangu confronted me and said that I must stop ill-treating Koch. And I said, I'm not ill-treating him. I don't even have an intention, because he's doing work that is reflecting on what is expected of me. But what I do not like is how he deals with these matters. We'll guide him. And then he comes back and consult with you and do, you know, deal with this matter differently. And the fact that, you know, he didn't even confront, you know, myself, even he confronted the chief investigator and the executive manager, wanting to influence, you know, what the outcome of that report should look like. And which for me, it was interference, and that was obviously conflicted, because it was a matter that, you know, was involving him directly. So there was that allegation that, you know, I did it deliberately and wanting to embarrass him. And from that angle, what worried me the most was that he received secondhand information before making those kind of, you know, allegations. And I indicated that I was dealing with that matter, you know, openly, and I have dealt with certain meetings before. If you talk about high-level cases, the Mpumalanga one was a high-level case because it involves the sitting, you know, deputy president of the country, Mr. David Mabuza. These two cases were, you know, executive management ethics, you know, breach, which, you know, had to deal with him. So I find it very difficult that, you know, we needed to be selective. But for me, in terms of principle, was that if a need arises, then I'll have to deal with matters the way I deem fit, so that we ensure that, you know, we come up, you know, with a well-informed report, and colleagues that colleagues can contribute towards that. So there was nothing, you know, amiss about it, but that was, you know, one of the, allegations that he made, you know, around me, that, you know, I'm up to, you know, up to something just to embarrass him. And I raised this matter with a public protector, and her response, she knew what I was talking about. And she told me to do my work and that I needed to finalize this report of Nkwinti because it's related to the permanent appointment of Mr. Mahlangu. And that's when ultimately I had, you know, to understand that, you know, there was a matter of Mr. Mahlangu that was in the bargaining council, and, you know, that has been dealt with in the bargaining council, and it's actually on the court roll. And I, you know, looked into that matter, and that's when I got record, you know, of that particular case, which I felt, you know, the manner in which we're dealing with this particular case, I do not believe it's correct, because of they both knew what my way, and I find myself, you know, in that difficult position. And now the allegations to me started to make sense why, you know, he was making those allegations that, you know, I have an agenda, which I did not have, because I do not know Minister Nkwinti from a bar of soap. I was trying to do my work. And when I looked into that record, that's when I understood what the matter was all about. For me, Chairperson was about doing my work, and I had no intention of, you know, destroying anyone. But the manner in which, you know, this matter, you know, was handled, I was very much, you know, uncomfortable. And that is one of those that created tension in the office.
And you say in paragraph 55 that you believe that the position you adopted in the Nkwinti investigation caused or contributed to the deterioration of your relationship with the CEO. Is that right?
Correct.
And what was the issue with the draft Deloitte report in that investigation?
The draft Deloitte report, you know, implicated Mr. Mahlangu for wrongdoing, you know, in that report. And he was of the view that, you know, that content should not be part of the Section 7-9.
That was his view?
Yes.
And is that one of the instances where you felt, one, he interfered in the investigation, and two, this was wrong because he was conflicted?
Yes, and he wanted, you know, the copy of the report, you know, from me at the time, and I couldn't give it to him.
All right. So in addition to the Nkwinti matter, you also mention, you make reference to the Busasa investigation and what you refer to as the rogue unit investigation as also being problem areas in the organization, insofar as the CEO and or the PP. Can you start just briefly explaining to the committee why you found their conduct problematic in relation to Busasa?
With regards to Busasa, I'll speak of the fact that, you know, this is a matter that fell within the ambit, you know, of the executive manager responsible for AJSD. And we looked into the complaint, you know, as a collective. It was myself, Mrs. Mukhaladi, and you know, the late Madiba around it. And when you look into the complaint, we looked at it to say that, you know, maybe what we needed to do was to, you know, advise Mr. Rodney, who was dealing with that, Matabuche, that was dealing with that matter, that the complaint is around, you know, the 500,000. And when we look into the approach that, you know, was taken then by Mr. Matabogwe, because of Mr. Matabogwe reported to Mrs. Mogaladi. So we try to, you know, advise on the matter. The first one is the one that is currently on paragraph 60, that when you look into the complaint, you know, focused on the 500,000 and that, you know, given the nature of the manner in which, you know, the investigation has started, is we are not going, we do not have a mandate as far as, you know, the investigation on those matters are concerned. So what we did with Mrs. Mogaladi, we discussed it with Mr. Matabogwe around it. And interestingly, he was agreeing, but later on then I was actually called into a meeting where the CEO and the chief of staff were to say that no, this matter cannot be delegated, you know, to the NPA because of the NDPP, you know, would not actually deliver the results that I want. You know, this matter should be focusing on that. And anyway, it's not our terrain to discuss on this matter. So I said, no, when we discussed it, it wasn't a matter of preference or whatever, but we were trying to discuss this matter, you know, to assist, you know, Mrs. Mogaladi. That was one aspect that happened. The second aspect that happened was when we discussed the first one, I think it's on paragraph 59. When we discussed this matter, part of what we came across was, you know, there was information that was not actually included in that particular report. And when this matter, you know, related to the investigation meeting that we had with Mr. Watson, and Mr. Watson, even in his word verbatim, he said even to the PP to say that I'm just a sandwich, you know, that that this matter is focusing on the CR17. And we indicated that, and when we look into the first draft of that particular report at an early stage after that meeting, the record of that, you know, Watson, you know, was not there. And he indicated that also that he has donated to many political parties and even individuals, and he does not understand what this matter is all about. So at that stage, those are the issues that we raised. But then later on, we learned that, you know, we are no longer supposed to be in that kind of, you know, the report. And in my discussion was that, you know, when we look into the issues that we raised, there was a perception, for instance, that, you know, we wanted or we have been coerced by certain individuals, and then were removed from that particular, you know, investigation, which I find it even very difficult, because the issues that we raised, you know, were not personal, but were in the interest of, you know, finalizing a report and looking into the risks as far as, you know, what was to be contained in that report. And this was based on the fact that it was still our responsibility, you know, to deal with those particular matters. So this is one of those issues that I know that there was an unhappiness, and, you know, the chief of staff even said to me that, you know, this report will be dealt in, you know, in this office, and the PP will emerge as the powerful woman, you know, in the country after dealing with this particular matter. And I started to have doubts as to whether, you know, our removal from there were issues that, you know, were genuine or in the interest of the organization. And it was a very difficult, you know, kind of a situation, because this was very much, you know, unusual, you know, for me since, you know, I started working in that particular office.
So when you say you were removed from the investigation, who was removed and by who?
You know, we were told by the the CEO that, you know, myself and Bona, you know, need not to be worried about the USASA matter. And it was following my inquiry when we had a meeting that Mr. Matabogwe is not coming and he was supposed to present on his cases. And he said that, you know, he's not supposed to be there because he's dealing with an important matter with the public protector. But I said, but it's part of what we are supposed to do. So he said, no, you're no longer part of that particular, you know, investigation. And anyway, the executive manager can deal with his agenda item.
Right. One of the issues that you raise as being problematic to you in the Busasa and Rogue Unit investigations, you say in paragraph 63 that the PP prioritized both reports. Now, surely you cannot fault the PP for wanting to expedite the investigations and the reports as soon as possible. Why did you find this problematic?
Chairperson, finalizing, I think that was good practice. You know, it was good for the public protector to finalize, you know, reports timeously as required by legislation on this type of cases. But my challenge or our challenge, you know, as a team, although in that affidavit I spoke for myself, was how the process, you know, that led to the finalization of that particular report was. So to complete a report on time, it's good because then the complainants, you know, get a relief, and it's also good practice. But for me, it was the manner in which, you know, some of the issues or some of the content then that we have been raising, you know, was, or some of the advices that we even gave, you know, were not actually considered. So I think for me, the problem is not about finalizing the process, but for me, it's finalizing, you know, a report and without considering, you know, certain information, or actually without actually closing the gaps or weighing the risks, if I may call it that way, so that at the end of the day, that report is finalized, you know, timeously.
Are you saying that because they were finalized so quickly, that had an impact on the quality produced?
Correct.
And then in paragraph 64, you set out a WhatsApp communication, which you say you received from the PP on the 26th of May. Where she is making reference to sabotage from the PG camp, as she put it in the text. Was this in relation to the Rogue Unit investigation?
Correct.
What did you understand this WhatsApp communication to be saying to you? And why was it problematic?
For me, it also, there was an email that first came out, you know, to from the chief of staff in one of the emails that, Minister Pravin was unruly, number one. And I was not even aware of the sabotage that was there. And, you know, the challenge with me is why, because of I was excluded in some of the processes, why actually do that? But what worried me the most, Chairperson, was that last statement that, you know, playing chess. And my understanding and my belief was that, you know, whatever the outcome of an investigation should be based on fact, on the information that we have received. But I find that statement worrying, because if you are really doing a proper investigation, why play, you know, chess? And my interpretation was that, you know, it was a political game that is being played.
And then in paragraph 66, you refer to another WhatsApp communication you received from her relating to a meeting with Mr. Ramaphosa on the 30th of May, where she was instructing you that you would form part of the team. And she'll give you a copy to read and shred thereafter. What was this about, and why is this problematic for you?
The first challenge that, you know, one had was the mere fact that, you know, with some investigations, you know, one was involved, one were not, at some stage were not involved. And now I need to go to Mahlambandlovu, you know, and deliver, you know, the section 7-9. And now I'm given a hard copy, which is unusual. No one would be given a soft copy. And I can only assume that probably the soft copy, you know, was problematic in terms of, you know, probably how it has been structured. But to shred it was the worst, because of in that office, we never shredded most of the reports that we have, especially with her comments. You know, I used to file them, you know, on notes so that I can go back to my notes and understand, you know, the rationale. So for it to be shred, it was an anomaly. But when you look into the other reports that we have dealt with, you know, following and, you know, involving cabinet members, whenever, you know, it's a draft report or whatever, there was never such an instruction to shred it, because of, for me, it was a section 7-9, and it never had, you know, even attachments or anything. I looked at it as normal, you know, kind of a report. And when I looked at this instruction, it was, I was surprised, and it was really unusual.
You also then raise, as one of the problematic investigations for you, the McBride investigation. Can you just briefly highlight for the committee what you thought disturbed you about either the PP or the CEO in that investigation?
You know, when we dealt with the McBride issue, you know, the complaint was around an appointment of a deputy director, which was in provincial administration office. So when we received, you know, the draft report with the executive manager, Tejan, you know, the tone of that particular, firstly, it was a tone of that particular investigation. And, you know, we started discussing that with the provincial head, that is Ms. Manyatela, that, you know, this report actually has got two complaints. Can you give us, you know, the copy of the other complaint? Who's the complaint? Because when you read the complaint is not talking about procurement. It's only talking about, you know, the appointment of a deputy director. Then instead of her answering that particular question, she went to the CEO that Ms. Tejan and myself are questioning, you know, her investigative skills, which I said, no, it's not about that, but it's about one understanding, you know, what this matter is all about. So then when we're dealing with this particular investigation, I said, but why would you focus on one of those that are actually part of the investigations that are normal? Then you're saying, no, Mr. McBride is likely to be nominated to be a deputy public protector. Therefore, we need to eliminate him from the system. Then I asked the question, we are talking about somebody at senior level. How would he have known such procurement and such appointments and laying this at his door without even considering that the issues of procurement, the CFO could be involved, or the manager supply chain could have been involved. Same thing as the appointment. But we couldn't find anything specifically that linked him as the person, but the investigation was, you know, talking to Mr. McBride. And the investigator himself, you know, later on, is that when we raised issues later, which was another anomaly, he sent the report directly to the public protector without the executive manager and myself, you know, having looked at it. So that was another aspect. And for me, it's the fact that the explanation that we got from the officials is that, you know, we have worked with McBride, we know that kind of an environment. And I said but that everybody else has got issues, but let's focus on the issue at hand. So for me and the executive manager, it was, this thing is not only, it was no longer about the investigation, but it was about something else. So that was also problematic, you know, for us, you know, in the office.
And finally, in your affidavit, you mentioned the PRASA investigation as being another example of the CEO where he improperly sought to interfere in the conduct of an investigation. Can you just elaborate for the committee how that was so, in your view?
Mr. Mahlangu indicated that, you know, there is a supplier that is not being paid, and that, you know, PRASA is taking its time to can do that. And then he sent me a message to understand that who's dealing with Prodigy, and he has been trying to get hold of Mr. Jan, could not get hold of him, get hold of her, I'm sorry. And then I had to talk to Mr. Jan about it, that, you know, she must intervene with regards to the payment. And it was, I think, 2 weeks that we have met with the board of PRASA under Mrs. Kanyisile, I forgot her name now. So we agreed in that meeting that, you know, whenever we're looking for information on the previous or investigations, we must talk to, you know, the board and establish what is happening. So he was saying that, no, we need to pay this complainant. And when we're asking, then Mr. Jan was asking questions. And he says that in that WhatsApp to say that I asked Nelly to intervene with regards to the payment. And now the complainant feels she's being investigated in terms of, you know, being assisted. Then I went to him to say that, but we cannot ultimately deal with this request because this office investigated that matter, and we are the ones that came up with the, you know, those recommendations that, you know, the appointment was irregular and therefore the matter is before the court. And then he said to me, you don't know whom you're dealing with. You're dealing with powerful politicians here, and you must resolve this matter as soon as possible. I said, I cannot do that because of, then what do I do, you know, and what do we say to PRASA, because of the matter is before the court and you could not do that. So it was one of those worrying factors that Mr. Mahlangu could not understand even where the case is. He would make instructions on matters that he did not even have a clue of what is happening. So those were some of the issues that, you know, actually troubled me, amongst others. I could go on and talk about other investigations.
Thank you, Ms. Molloy. Can we go to her affidavit for the inquiry, Bundle D, I think it is. So in the affidavit that you've made for the inquiry, you've obviously associated yourself with the affidavit you made in the High Court, which we've substantially just gone through now. But you also then, in this affidavit, elaborate on other aspects, one of which is this issue, which is the culture of fear at the PPSA. And in paragraph 8 of your affidavit, you then reiterate that when you were the COO, you were responsible for investigations, and you set out the reporting lines that you had. He had four executive managers reporting to you, and then you reported to the PP for investigations, to the CEO for administrative issues, and to the DPP, whom you've said was then Advocate Kevin Malunga for cases older than 2 years. You've also alluded to what you say, you've also alluded in your evidence already to what you say in paragraph 9, which is the backlog that you found and what you did to deal with it in the time that you were there. But in paragraph 10, you then say that the PP was obsessed with eradicating the backlog. Now, before we talk about this, I want to put this proposition with you. It would seem to me, as an ordinary individual in relation to the PPAC, that it's quite laudable for the executive authority to want to eradicate a backlog. Would you not agree?
I agree, as I stated earlier.
Yes. So what was problematic then about the PP wanting to get rid of this backlog? What was the problem in relation to this?
The problem was what I said earlier, that, you know, when you look into this kind of a backlog and you look even into the area and the amount of work that needed to go into those investigations is, you know, we were focused mainly on that than nothing else, but actually even pushing the numbers, you know, at the expense of content.
Okay, we'll get to that because you deal with quality later on in your affidavit. But in this particular paragraph, you say that in monitoring the progress of the backlog, the PP imposed her own impossible and unreasonable short-term targets. Now, my question is, were the targets not set by the executive managers and their investigators?
No. Is that I'll receive an instruction as to which this report needs to be, you know, released by when, and then we'll go back to the executive managers as to what, you know, what needs to be released by the end of the month. For instance, I will tell you, I received an instruction on the 26th of March that, you know, the FSB report must be released by the 28th of March. That was almost 2 days. And there was no way that, you know, that report could be finalized in those 2 days. So for me, that was one kind of a challenge. But personally, as I stated earlier, it's actually good that we finalize, you know, the reports on time, eradicating the backlog. But when you look at the unreasonable and impossible short-term targets that were given even to specific, you know, chief investigators and executive managers, for me, it was something that, you know, was worrisome at the end of the day.
What made these targets unreasonable? Can you be a little bit specific? The targets that you say the PP required, what made them unreasonable?
I've mentioned, you know, the issue around the amount of work that needed to go in there vis-a-vis the date that we were given, you know, to finish that. I'll actually even give you a second example. There was a report that we're supposed to, you know, deal with the Tshwane municipality on appointments, and the period that we have been given that we needed to finalize it quickly was very much unreasonable. But what we did with that particular report, I had to put up a team that we had to deal with within that particular, you know, period. But at the end of the day, what happened was everybody else had to leave doing and focusing on helping, you know, the senior in the chief investigator involved in that report so that it's completed on time. And I felt that, you know, that is not the right way of working, but I think the environment allowed for people to agree to targets because of whenever an instruction comes, it was very clear that, you know, if you don't get that done, then there's going to be punitive measures.
Right. And you say later on in the same paragraph that during dashboard meetings, people were forced to commit to targets which they knew were impossible to achieve. Now my question is, surely executive managers could disagree with the PP
You mean on targets? There was no room for that.
Can you elaborate?
You know, even if, as I stated, that, you know, people will have to commit for, you know, for all those particular targets because of, they were scared because of most of the time, as I said, that, you know, instructions were accompanied by a statement, you know, of, you know, an Audi or a threat of not, if you are not going to deal with those particular matters. So that was not an easy, you know, kind of a meeting. And people had to commit to those kind of targets. As I said, that we will go out when you look at it, that, you know, there's an amount of work that needed to be done. But unfortunately, you know, we had to live with that norm of an Audi environment.
So let me take you to paragraph 12 of your affidavit, where you describe, in your view, the PP's leadership style. And you say she was authoritarian. She must be bowed down to, quite literally. Her style of leadership was characterized by inflexibility. Now, Ms. Baloyi, is that not a bit of an exaggeration? Can you just elaborate on this authoritarian and bowing down to leadership style and how she must be addressed as madam and all of that? Can you elaborate for the committee, please?
That has been my experience, you know, having been in that particular, you know, office. For instance, I have worked with various MECs and ministers, but you know, when the public protector walks from an office to the boardroom, you know, we had to rise, and which I find it, you know, an anomaly that, you know, it's not a person that walks in as an executive authority, which most of the MECs and ministers that I've worked with, you know, do not actually, you know, do that. And I think I just felt that when you are at that particular level, you know, you need to deal with matters, you know, in a manner that you understand your team, you understand your environment. I'll cite an example.
Sorry to disturb you. You said you had to rise. You mean if she walked into a room and you were already in the room, you had to rise? Is that what you mean?
Yes, we had to rise. We had to rise.
Okay. And you interpreted this as what?
I mean, for me, it's I interpreted it as, you know, a sign of power and leadership that needed to be done. I mean, it's not somebody that is walking maybe some few meters, but it's just few steps. You just open a door and come into that boardroom. It's just a step, two or three steps, but we'll just have to rise. And I find it, you know, out of the ordinary. And when I ask colleagues, why are we doing that? And they say that this is how it needs to be done.
So you say then she fostered, we're still on paragraph 12, she fostered a culture of mistrust and insecurity in the organization, and you make reference to a WhatsApp text that you say she sent you, warning you not to trust Ms. Mokgaladi. And is this the text you're talking about?
Yes, that is a text that I spoke about.
Are you able to recall what circumstances what led to this WhatsApp text message?
If you look at the date, it was when I've just started, you know, in that office. And it was a day after, you know, Mr. Tebele and Ms. Mokgaladi were in my office for a long time, you know, dealing with this particular, you know, for a period. That they've been in a meeting and appraising me on certain matters. And she was, I can't remember, but I was surprised that, you know, she could send me that message. But my assumption was, you know, it was because of that, because I've just started and I didn't know the individuals, you know, personally.
So can you also just elaborate for the committee on what you mean by what you say in paragraph 13, which is the PP would not or couldn't allow professionals employed in the PPSA space they require to do their jobs to conduct investigations? These are quite serious claims to make. But of course, you were the CEO and you were there. What do you mean by this?
Yeah, I've noted your hand, Advocate Mbofu.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. I thought I was muted.
Thank you. Please respond, Ms. Baloyi.
You know, at the time when we're dealing with this, you know, backlog and other, you know, cases, then there was a proposal that, you know, people should be moved around. You know, other people would not be dealing with this kind of an investigations. Now they have to go to new areas. On the other hand, we were also, you know, focusing on, you know, the a new organizational structure that, you know, was supposed to be fit for purpose. So I find it very difficult as to what is it that, you know, that needed to be done. And in that particular process, outside one example, one, you know, in senior investigator was in a state that, you know, she had to cry in the corridors because now she was being moved to another area. And the other reasons for, you know, the reasons that when you engage with Mr. Matlang, it was about, you know, gossips that ultimately led to making decisions that were not in the interest of the work that we were doing. And, you know, at the end of the day, you'll find that, you know, there were levels of mistrust amongst colleagues because of, you know, somebody else now had to deal with a matter that somebody else, you know, have not been done. So, you know, when these decisions were taken, were excluded from the process, and with all executive managers, we had to meet with Mr. Mashangu to say that in the middle of these investigations, you still expect us to perform. However, you want us to move people around. We are also supposed to deal with structural matters. And you are creating a problem for all of us because of then we are sitting with, you know, employees that are not happy. There's tension in the office as to what informs, you know, those kind of outcomes. So in most instances, what we'll get from him was, you know, no, we have just observed so and so, it's, you know, it's not going to do this report quite well, or so and so cannot be trusted. But I said, this is a professional environment. As a COO, as a program manager, when you move someone and they were doing their work, you know, we need to explain this thing. I remember that there was a lady that even went to the public protector's office, Princess, and she came out of there in a state because she was one of those that were supposed to be, you know, moved. She was crying in the corridors, hysterical. And Mr. Mashangu wrote to, you know, the chief investigator in that unit to say that she must tell Princess to behave, you know, instead of causing drama. And I said, this was not about drama. This is about, you know, work. So at some stage, that's what I'm saying, that, you know, when somebody comes to your office and cry to say, I've never done this work before and I cannot be moved and I need to be, you know, assisted in terms of looking into how I go about this work, I require training. On the other hand, this work of dealing with these cases, you know, it's massive and there are tight deadlines. And when you ask me to go and start something new, I will fail. So this was the kind of an environment that, you know, decisions were taken in a manner that I believed that it was not in the interest of the organization, because you can't just give somebody who is not fit to do or to actually execute certain responsibilities, you know, and start with a case that has got clear deadlines. So for me, it was the lack of appreciation of professionalism and looking into what are the strengths and weaknesses of this team, what is how we can help them, and if we do that, what are the risks, you know, of not doing that. So for me, it was about moving people, and we don't care, you know, they're gonna start and do that work. And I felt that, you know, that environment, you know, it was not right in terms of taking decisions that affect people, because these are the people that are the engine of the core mandate of that particular office.
Okay, before I recognize Advocate Mbofu.
Sorry, it's an old hand, Chairperson.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Proceed, Advocate Myers.
Thank you, Chair. So staying with paragraph 13 at the end, the last sentence, you say that the PP involved herself in operational matters of the office to the detriment of reporting structures and management relationships, and this created immense confusion and tension. Can you elaborate on that, please, and be more specific?
When I look at when I wrote that paragraph was, you know, there are certain matters that I am of the view that if we are talking about a public protector that is operating at executive authority level, is that, you know, she would be involved on reports when they are concluded and it's actually work that, you know, has been sanctioned by those that have got a responsibility to do so. But in some instances, we'll be busy with reports and then she'll be giving other instructions on the senior investigators on what you need to do. And you would have seen a report before, and when you ask the senior investigator, they'll tell, no, the PP wants it in this particular manner. And at times you wouldn't know whether, you know, what is it that we need to do when we don't agree. And I felt that, you know, it was an executive authority that was operating, you know, at a very low level, and which was detriment to the reporting structures. For instance, when, you know, there are matters that are related to legal services, I'll give you a classical example. It's about a report that is, you know, actually in my area, which is investigation, but, you know, legal services, you know, is currently, you know, with corporate services. Therefore, in terms of, you know, governance, you wouldn't even know where do you feature in, because certain decisions have been taken that affect, you know, even your budget. So it was a very difficult, you know, kind of an environment, you know, to operate, because at times you wouldn't even know how to deal with a matter that you have allocated to an investigator, and then later on you are told, no, take it, you know, take that work from that particular investigator and give it to somebody else. And the question that comes, you know, naturally to someone is that, what is wrong in me handling this particular environment? And most of the time, the reasons that were provided, it was not actually, you know, related to competences, but it was related to something which you wouldn't even communicate to the individuals concerned, and still feel like you are providing leadership, or you'd ultimately even, you know, be a clown yourself by telling somebody that somebody who does not even work with you does not trust you. So it was that kind of an environment that, you know, in some instances, or in most instances, created, you know, tension amongst, you know, team members.
So you say in paragraph 14 that you talk about the pressure on you and other executives to take disciplinary measures against staff, and that on many occasions you would refuse to take those steps against staff members who reported to you. Can you just explain and elaborate for the committee why it is that you wouldn't take that approach when instructed to take such steps against people who reported to you?
In terms of any manager, when you give somebody the instruction, you must know that, you know, it's a reasonable instruction, or it's something that it's within the law. And you also need to explain yourself why you give that instructions, what the expected outputs are, and also engage with them to find out what kind of support do they need. And when they've got challenges after that particular process, you intervene and establish, you know, the causes of delays or the causes of performance. You do not actually give an instruction and a timeline and with threats that, you know, for instance, we are going to be managed. I'll give you an example. We had an investigator that was promoted by the name of Funzo. She was just admitted as an advocate and given, you know, more responsibilities. She could not cope, but all the time when we're dealing with cases, you know, that were managed by Funzo, is that why is Funzo not actually, punished, or, you know, why she's not disciplined, she's not performing, but it's somebody that you have recently promoted. And as an employer, I felt that, you know, you've got a responsibility to nurture that talent, to guide and develop, but you cannot just promote someone and later on, you know, wanting to discipline them when they cannot achieve it. And I felt that is very much unfair. And in my view is, you cannot manage something that you do not even give an opportunity to understand its context. And it was my view that I need to listen to my colleagues, understand their challenges, and, you know, because of the environment in which you are working in, much as I appreciate that we needed to meet our targets, but you cannot ignore, you know, some of the challenges that they face as a manager and not try to resolve them or help them throughout the particular process. So for me, it was an environment that you do it on this day. If not, actually, you know, you are going to get an Audi or you have to be disciplined.
Thank you. Chair, can I just deal with one last issue before we break for lunch? And then after lunch, I won't be long. I think I'll be about 20 minutes or so. Thank you. So let's go to paragraph 15. You talk about a meeting. She called you in the PP into her office with Mr. Mahlangwe and the late Mr. Nyembe, who was her chief of staff. Do you see that?
Yes.
Why do you, can you recall when that meeting was? What had happened? What had caused that meeting to be called?
I can't recall an incident, but it was, you know, I received a call from Mr. Mahlangwe that I need to come to the PP's boardroom. And I went into that particular, boardroom. And when I get in there, Mr. Mahlangwe said to me, use the phrase that if you can't feed your stomach, we'll feed it. And we feed it for you, then it means that we don't need you. And I say, what does that mean? Then they were saying to me that, I'm not actually performing. And again, is the fact that, you know, I've been given, you know, an instruction long time ago to deal with the non-performance issues around Mrs. Mohaladi. And because of that, you know, it's something that, you know, they are worried about, and that now I've befriended all the executive managers. That's why they are not actually performing. And when they mentioned that, honestly, I recalled that it looks like, you know, there is something wrong with Mrs. Mohaladi that I do not know, you know, in terms of that particular issue, because of the performance was across, you know, the organization, but the name that was mentioned in particular was that of Mrs. Mohaladi. And, you know, although the performance about on the cases older than 2 years, you know, were transversal within an organization.
And what was your response?
I responded to say that, but I need to, I have noted, you know, what they've said. And, but again, I believe that, you know, the reasons that have been, provided to me in terms of most of the issues related to not meeting those deadlines, you know, they were sound, but I committed that, you know, I'll take corrective action. And I find that meeting, you know, awkward, because immediately after they said that, they said, no, the meeting is adjourned. It didn't even last for 5 minutes.
All right. And then in paragraph 16, you talk about, you say you met with the executives to establish their challenges, and they explained a number of issues to you, including the targets, the decision-making, the interference in operational matters, you say in paragraph 16. Did you communicate with the PP regarding these constraints and these challenges expressed to you by the executive managers?
Yes, if even when you look into those minutes, you know, of July 31st, some of these issues might not have been said in, I mean, or expressed in my in the same manner in my affidavit, but the challenges that, you know, they had, you know, was around those particular issues. For instance, when we looked into, you know, when looking into operational matters, I remember that, you know, that's what, you know, ultimately led to the issues around the Gauteng office. You know, that there was a disagreement between Ms. Manyatela, you know, the PR manager, and an admin officer in that office. With this admin officer, you know, who has lost the brother-in-law in Polokwane and requested to travel, you know, before Friday. And I remember, if I recall, probably could have been the weekend of the 15th or the 31st. And Ms. Tejani came to me that, you know, there's this issue that is at hand, that Ms. Manyatela is refusing to give this admin officer, you know, leave. And I asked as to, what is this person doing? Is it an investigation? Does she have timelines and whatever? And surprisingly, before we dealt with that issue, Mr. Matlango confronted me that, you know, this is a problematic employee, and she does not respect Ms. Manyatela, and she's not deserving leave. She can leave on Friday. But I said to them, you keep an admin officer in the office because she's got a challenge with a provincial manager, and you expect this person to be fully functional when she's got bereavement. Really, just leave this person to go. And to my surprise, you know, because of this particular issue, you know, that created challenges in that particular office, I was excluded, you know, from a meeting that was supposed to go there and, you know, address those issues, because of, I instructed Ms. Tejan that, you know what, we are turning this institution into a mental health, health institution. That person won't be productive. What they need to do is to ask her what is required of her before she leaves, and then she can leave. Whether there are other issues that, you know, involved her, you know, it doesn't actually, it doesn't matter, but she must complete what she's supposed to do, and she be granted leave and go and bury her loved one, and then we're gonna deal with those issues. So I just felt that was very much unreasonable and unfair, because I told them, you'll keep her here, but she won't be functional. But the other aspect was, I used to find it very difficult that issues of Gauteng, out of all the provinces that Mr. Jani had, you know, had to go to the CEO. And in most instances, you wouldn't even get both sides of the story. You'll side with Ms. Manyatela and act on what, or on that particular matter.
Chair, this may be a convenient time.
No, I'll give you the extra 15 minutes.
Thank you.
To conclude.
And so, moving on, in your affidavit, you talk about, you talk about your own particular incident where your daughter was ill and you needed to take leave to attend to her. And you say in paragraph 17 that the CEO refused to allow you to take leave. Is that right?
Correct.
And can you just explain to the committee what the context of that communication was?
The communication that, yes, on the 2nd of September, there were reports that I was supposed to submit to the public protector, and the night before, my daughter, who was 8 years then, was very sick. And I informed the PP's office and the CEO that I will not be able to come to work earlier because I need to take my daughter to the PED. And I had reports that I worked on, you know, at home. So I started in the office and I dropped those reports very early in the morning. I think around 7:45, I was in the office. Then I left before 10. And then I got a message from the PP asking me, where are those reports? That's when I responded to say that, you know, I have some of the reports I've left in the office and I have to review them, and stating that, you know, my daughter, I've taken her to a PED and she's diagnosed with bronchopneumonia and I'm finalizing logistics. And then she said, all the best, she's healed. I said, thanks, PP. Then 2 minutes later, then I get a message that says, I'll be taking action against CEO for your failure to meet deadlines. We need to lead by example and be accountable. If you submitted all these on time, such emergency would not portray one as insensitive. I just said to myself, really? You know, now I obviously I've got competing kind of, you know, challenges with me being a mother to an 8-year-old who's struggling to breathe and is on, you know, she had to be admitted. And now I need to manage the reports and I need to have a right frame of mind. And then I had to give it. And I think when you look into the following picture, I had to send proof that my doctor is in. My daughter is it's actually admitted in hospital. It's true. I had to send photos. But I just said to myself, you know, I had to live with it. And it was not happening to me. I remember even when I was there, Ms. Mohaladi also had tight deadlines. You know, her niece was sick. And the doctors informed them that, you know, she was on her last, you know, days, you know, of her life. She, Miss Mohaladi, drove to Polokwane. She met a cousin. She wanted to brief me. I said, no, communicate directly with the PP so that, you know, she understands what you are actually did. The very same message, you know, was like, you know, showing some form of empathy, but there's always a but, you know, that she said that, you know, showed some empathy and gave Ms. Mohaladi that I needed those reports by 1600 hours on the same day. And I said to myself, really, somebody's driving from Polokwane, much as you understand there's work that needs to be done. But for me, it was such an environment whereby you don't know whether that empathy is genuine and like, which is normally, you know, accompanied by a statement, you know, a punitive measure. So it is one thing. I mean, for me, a chairperson, a mother, you know, in our culture, if they say that somebody is in hospital, very sick, or somebody has got bereavement, you even, you know, as a mother, you know, put yourself in the position of leadership to say that I have to communicate whatever that I need, you know, from that particular person in a sensitive manner. And also the timing is very much important. But this is not what we face, but we soldiered on. And this is an indication that, you know, I'm talking about, you know, a culture of that was.
Thank you, Ms. Palo. Thank you, Ms. Palo. We got that, Advocate Mayose.
So Ms. Palo, charge four, as you know, of the motion, it talks about harassment, victimization, intimidation by either the public protector or the former CEO. The question I have for you is, where is the harassment, victimization, and intimidation in the story that you've come to tell this inquiry?
The number of Audis that I have received, you know, the number of, you know, unfounded allegations that, you know, I have been made against me, really, you know, for me, that was victimization and intimidation. I mean, you work and you are promised that, you know, regardless of the circumstances, you know, you're going to get, you know, an Audi. For me, that is victimization.
And finally, nothing is all bad. Can you point out to any positive aspects of your experience in working at the PPSA for the 8-9 months that you did?
Yes, Chairperson, it's not all bad. I think it was a very good environment. You know, people were passionate about their jobs, you know, professionals. You know, I had good relationships with colleagues, and they are the best of people that, you know, if given an opportunity, one day, God permitting, maybe I can go and work with them. You know, I worked with a good team. I went into that environment. You know, they inducted me, they supported me, we engaged very well. Whenever that, you know, we had differences, you know, would iron them out and be able, you know, to do things in the interest of the organization. I think this is a team that, you know, under those circumstances, as I alluded to earlier, you know, managed the backlog, you know, it received. So I've learned a lot, you know, from that particular team, you know, that is the, but unfortunately we find ourselves with that kind of leadership, but really I admired the team and I'll continue to admire them. You know, they love their work, you know, and I think that's it. You know, it was not all bad. You know, there are things that are good about that environment. I should be honest about it.
Chair, I have no other questions for this witness, Chair.
I've given you 15 more minutes. Thank you. Are you done?
I wouldn't mind being, I went through the last bits in a bit of a rush.
Just finish, it's fine.
Before the lunch break?
Yes. How much more time do you need? How much more time do you need?
No, Chair. I have no questions for the witness.
You would?
Yeah.
I'll
deal with them differently if they come up.
Okay. Thank you. We'll take a lunch break and be back at 2. Thank you. We pause.
Recording stopped.